Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Up front next, breaking news, Stormy Daniels stares down Trump, the most explosive day of testimony yet. I was in the courtroom today. And the vivid and graphic details that Stormy Daniels shared about the alleged sexual encounter were excruciating. How did the jury respond? Also breaking tonight, the judge in Trump's classified documents case postponing that trial indefinitely. Former Trump White House attorney Ty Cobb has a lot to say about Judge Eileen Cannon, and he's out front tonight. And I'm headed to Wisconsin for an exclusive interview with President Biden. What do voters in this crucial battleground state think? A special report. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, the breaking news, the explosive day in Trump's criminal courtroom. I sat behind Trump today in that courtroom as Stormy Daniels took the stand. Now, Daniels, of course, is the adult film star at the center of this case. Her testimony was riveting and at times deeply uncomfortable for everyone in the room. During all of it, Trump was 15 feet away from Stormy Daniels as she was asked for explicit and excruciating detail about her alleged sexual encounter with Trump in a Lake Tahoe hotel room. She described it coming out of his hotel room bathroom to find Trump on the bed in boxer shorts and a T-shirt. And then she was asked more, and she gave all the details. She said, I had my clothes and my shoes off. I removed my bra. We were in the missionary position. And this is the non-graphic part. And Trump was clearly angry, scowling and impatient, tapping his attorney on the arm repeatedly, prompting her to object. Now, the judge was also uncomfortable, even himself objecting at one point. And then when the jury was not in the room after lunch, Judge Mershon actually admonished Trump's team by saying he did not understand why they failed to object more. But Judge Mershon made it clear that Trump's move for a mistrial, after Trump's attorney said Daniels' testimony would, quote, inflame the jury, was not appropriate at this time. As for the jury, they were listening intently, their emotions not visible, but a lot of note-taking, and people in various angles of the room were describing furious note-taking, just incredible intensity from the jury today. And the pace of the questioning was very fast. And then when the cross-examination began, I'll tell you, wow, in the room, that was a tense and angry tone. The defense attorney, who was female, kept saying things to Daniels in this tone. You made up the story. You hate him. Trump's attorney pointed to this tweet from 2022 that Daniels had posted, quote, I'll never give that orange turd a dime. Now, Daniels said, okay, sure, I must have said that, and I did it in retaliation for what he said to me, referring to Trump calling her a horse face and a sleaze bag, which already had been adjudicated. Now, Trump's attorney then shouted back, that's you making fun. You despise him, and you call him names all the time. Daniels responded, yes, because he made fun of me first. The defense attorney replies, so one of you started it, but you both continue it. I mean, this was the sort of tone in the room, right? The pettiness, the smallness, but yet the heart of it. And this cross-examination, a sign of what's to come on Thursday. Stormy Daniels back on the stand. Cross will continue, redirect, recross for this crucial witness. Paula Reed is out front live outside the New York courthouse to begin our coverage. And Paula, this was by far the most compelling and dramatic day of testimony so far.
Yeah, Erin, it's the most engaged we have seen the defendant throughout this case. But just a moment ago, we received the transcript from today that revealed a previously unknown exchange between the judge and the defense attorneys, where the judge told defense attorneys that he would not tolerate Trump's behavior during Daniels' testimony. He accused Trump of audibly cursing and shaking his head. Now, Erin, this is significant because this is not something that we have seen so far in the criminal case, though it was the kind of behavior that Trump displayed in his civil litigation. But Judge Mershon making it clear today, this is not something he will tolerate in his courtroom.
It's a very, very unfair trial.
Donald Trump coming face to face with Stormy Daniels in court today as she took the stand to tell the jury about her alleged sexual encounter with the then businessman. Prosecutors asked Daniels to identify Trump in the courtroom. She pointed towards him, saying, in the navy blue jacket, with Trump having no visible reaction.
After walking through how she got into the adult film industry, the prosecution quickly turned to Daniels' first introduction to Trump at a 2006 golf tournament in Lake Tahoe. That meeting turned into a dinner invitation she initially declined, but her publicist got her to reconsider. What could possibly go wrong? Were his words to me, Daniels recounted with a giggle. If nothing else, you'd get a great story. She described Trump's hotel suite in detail, saying that when she arrived, he was wearing satin pajamas. Does Mr. Hefner know you stole his pajamas? She teased him, asking him to change, and he obliged. Daniel said Trump asked her about the business aspects of her adult film directing and her possibly appearing on The Apprentice. And she briefly asked Trump about his wife, Melania, who had recently given birth to their son, Barron. Recalling Trump said, "We don't sleep in the same room." The statement causing Trump to shake his head and murmur to his attorneys. When she later returned from a trip to the bathroom, Daniels testified that Trump was waiting for her on the bed wearing only boxers. "I felt like the room spun in slow motion," Daniels said. "I thought, oh my God, what did I misread to get here?" She testified that the two had sex. Although Trump did not initially ask her to keep the encounter quiet, she said, "I told very few people that we actually had sex because I felt ashamed that I didn't stop it." It was after Trump began running for president.
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
And the infamous Access Hollywood tape came out that her then publicist said she should sell the story. "My motivation wasn't money. It was to get the story out," she testified. But when she found out Trump and Michael Cohen were interested in buying the story for $130,000, she told the court it was the best thing that could have happened because then I'd be safe and the story wouldn't come out. Then, in a searing cross-examination, Trump's attorney, Susan Nicholas, pushed Daniels. "Am I correct that you hate President Trump?" "Yes," Daniels replied. "You want him to go to jail?" Nicholas asked. "I want him to be held accountable," Daniels said. "If he's found guilty, yes." Daniel's casual and relaxed demeanor changed as the defense's questions became more pointed, attacking her credibility and trying to establish Daniels has always just been trying to make a profit. "You've been making money by claiming to have had sex with President Trump for more than a decade," Nicholas asked. "That story has made you a lot of money, right?" Daniels responded, "It's also cost me a lot of money." Court is not in session tomorrow, but Daniels will be back on the stand Thursday to continue that cross-examination. But Aaron, what we'll all be watching for over the next 72 hours is if Trump can continue to abide by the gag order that prohibits him from attacking witnesses in this case. Daniels clearly got under his skin today, but the judge has threatened him with possible jail time if he violates the order again.
All right, Paula, thank you very much. And Joey Jackson, everyone's here with Joey. Let me just start with you. So, the great detail, the satin pajamas. See, I mean, they wanted that because that gives you an image. You're looking at a guy who actually wore a yellow tie today. First day he hasn't worn the red one, I think.
One other time with
yellow. One other time. Okay, so see, we need to have our in there every day. But, you know, they also showed the prosecution that Stormy Daniels has in her cell phone Rona Graff's, his longtime assistant, cell phone. And, you know, those of us who interacted with Trump many, many over the years know that that's a crucial number. And Keith Schiller, who she had entered as Keith Trump. Now, Keith is an interesting one because that one, you know, you would get if you had a certain level of contact because Keith is his personal body man and with him at all times. So the kind of interactions that she is alleging they had, Keith Schiller would be a name that you might have in your cell phone.
Yes. So, wow. Wow, wow, wow.
I'm sorry. So, I didn't mean to start you on satin pajamas, but...
So, she is the elephant in the room, right? So, you want to be descriptive because the devil's in the details, right? Anyone can make an allegation as to an affair. But you, I mean, you can argue as to whether they went too far with regard to pulling out the details of what occurred in Missionary, etc. But the reality is that the more detailed you are, the harder it is to dispute the fact that something happened of the variety that she described. Now, you can, in cross-examination, tattoo her all you want with regard to credibility, with regard to hate, with regard to putting out tweets against him, with saying you don't want to pay the judgment against him, right? You don't have any intent, and you called him this, and you called him a turd, etc. But at the end of the day, Were you wearing satin pajamas? Were you in boxers? Was your hotel room three times the size of my home? All of these things go to the notion that this affair is true. Now, the defense in attacking that, remember the essence of it, we're not talking about it, right, an affair here at the end of the day. It's not
right. And then at the end of the day, whether it happened or didn't actually is not relevant.
That's not relevant. But, yeah, but right. Understand, Aaron, the boss, that is Mr. Trump, has to go after that because he's denied, denied, denied. And that savages his credibility. So the attorneys have to attack her on whether the affair actually happened. Riveting testimony.
So you mentioned it was riveting. And when you mentioned the hate, so Stacey, let me ask you about that. Trump's lawyer, Susan Necklace, as we saw her there, she said, am I correct that you hate President Trump? Stormy Daniels replies, yes. Now, I would say that what is she going to say? Exactly. I mean, it was a genuine moment. The question is, does that hurt her or not with the jury?
Well, you know, I look at it as how refreshing to see an honest witness. I think, why would she like Donald Trump at this point? She got on the stand. She said some things, actually, that got her in a bit of trouble. She wasn't supposed to go as far, but she said she was threatened in 2011 in a parking lot in Las Vegas. She thought that was Trump-related with her story. She, you know, what it didn't come out in the courtroom because it wasn't allowed is she said publicly that she's been death-threatened by Trump supporters, you know, ever since her story went public. So what reason in the world would she have to like Donald Trump at this point in time? So I think it really kind of helped her credibility. You know, the defense, by the defense is trying to say, you have a motive to testify against him and you're making it up and you're a liar because you hate him and you want to see him jailed. But it's really the opposite. Why wouldn't she hate him?
I mean, how else is she supposed to answer that question? All right, so Jeremy, you know, when I came in, my seat, you know, every day, as you know, in the courtroom, the seats shift, and I was really right behind Trump, so it was interesting watching him and, you know, the lawyers. You were able to see sort of the front of his face from where you were sitting in court. You know, what was the moment that stood out to you the most?
I mean, I think this is the first time we really got Trump reacting to the testimony. I was watching him, particularly when Stormy Daniels started talking about the anecdote that she spanked him with his magazine, and that he visibly mouthed something that looked like an expletive. And sure enough, the judge, we learned from the transcript that we just got, admonished Trump through his attorney, telling him that he should not be doing that, and that he was audibly saying, you know, mouthing expletives in the courtroom. So this, it clearly got to him. You know, he had a scowl on his face for much of the testimony during the direct. But he was also really engaged with his attorneys. He at several points, he would kind of motion over and hit Susan Necklace on the arm. And she objected when he would do that. He was passing notes, you know, and he was really...
And a lot of those were sustained. I want to ask Stephanie something very specific here, but that was sort of, I thought, an incredible admonishment. Obviously, not a lawyer, but when the judge said, I had to object for you. Where were you guys?
Without question. So understand this, Aaron. What happens is there are sometimes that judges will say, sustained, sustained, and the lawyer says nothing about it. Because at the end of the day, you don't want things to come out that are so prejudicial, right? That meaning so harmful to the defendant that you lose control. And now that is
and that's
sort of
what they're saying. They said that it was so prejudicial what she'd said.
And you know, Aaron, there's something so strange about today. The Trump defense team really was not on the ball because they had this pretrial ruling or decision from the judge that Stormy Daniels, they knew, was going to talk about being in the hotel room with Trump and having, you know, her testimony is they had sex. But the judge was like, that's as far as it goes. I don't want all the details. And then Stormy Daniels inserted all those details into the case. And that would have been the perfect time for the defense team to jump up and say,
I mean,
Judge,
they didn't.
You know, we decided this beforehand. What's going on here? And they didn't.
And all those details in there, Stephanie, obviously so crucial to Trump's response. So then Stormy Daniels also testified that she and Trump talked about Melania Trump. So Daniels says, and I just quote here, Stephanie from the room, I actually said, Melania is very beautiful. What about your wife? He said, oh, don't worry about that. We are actually don't even sleep in the same room. Trump had his eyes closed when Daniels testified to this. What did you make of it?
Well, there were so many details that she spoke about today that were true, but from things I've seen myself, like you said, Keith Schiller talking, I knew him very, very well in the beginning, and that's exactly the role he kind of did play. Mm-hmm. They do actually sleep in two separate bedrooms. And so I think the fact that he felt cornered with all of these true statements is why he was so aggressive. In my experience with Donald Trump, it's when he knows he's caught or he feels cornered that he becomes extremely agitated and then expects everybody to come out fighting even harder for him. It's really interesting. Same with his grooming products. That's true. So she had a lot of details that were true that only a very small group of people would know.
Right. Or someone who had been in a very intimate situation with someone would know. I mean, so Stephanie, you know, when you hear now that we're just finding out that the judge had admonished Trump for swearing and grimacing, which we have not yet seen in this case, we had seen more in the E. Jean Carroll case. What does that signal to you?
Well, again, you know, he felt cornered. He was angry. He clearly felt in the first half of the day that his team wasn't fighting for him. It brought back memories of when he'd get agitated at me and say, "You're not fighting for me hard enough. You're not saying things on TV that are strong enough." Or he would do that to his legal team with both of the impeachments when we were in the White House. He would yell at them, "You're not fighting for me." So I think that after the lunch break, he clearly let them know what he wanted. And she, his lawyer, was very aggressive with Stephanie Clifford towards the end. So I have a feeling he felt better about it. The fact that he walked out and didn't really bring her up and actually tried to talk some campaign issues makes me think that his people are telling him, you know, "We're winning now, sir. This was a great day for us."
Yeah. I mean, certainly, Jeremy, you know, watching Stormy Daniels, obviously the demeanor change, you know, between the direct and the cross-examination. But the lawyer doing the cross-examination, the strategy was very clear. Yeah. They wanted to belittle her. And they tried very hard. Mm-hmm. I could see her face. And, you know, it's interesting, obviously, she's blocked a little bit from seeing Trump. But, but watching her face respond, and she sort of seemed to be giving a bring it attitude, you know, like when she was baited, she was angry. What did you see up close?
Yeah, I mean, it really was stark, just and night and day, comparing how she testified in the morning before the prosecution when they were asking the questions about what happened. She was almost like she was gossiping. She was talking very quickly. The judge had to tell her multiple times, "You have to slow down for the court reporter." You know, she seemed relaxed and comfortable and, you know, would make gestures. At one point when she was describing Trump on the bed, she literally lifted her leg up in the witness box in her arm. Obviously, then you come to the afternoon.
There is a confident, comfortable witness, yes, shall we say.
It was extremely different. She was sitting up. She was very tense. She was giving one word, very short responses. But I think it was defiant. She was telling Susan Nicholas, "No, you're wrong when you're accusing me of this, that, and the other." And I think we're going to see that again on Thursday.
All right. And so Thursday, so there's a day between now and then. And they could have finished today if they'd just gone a little longer, but they didn't. They left a little early. So you got to finish the cross, then you got to redirect, and you got time to think.
Oh, without question. And remember what the complaints were early on, because we all know that you're not getting the release of the witnesses prior because they don't trust Trump to do the right thing, right? And so the defense was saying, "We don't even want Stormy called." So I think that right today, we want her delayed. We didn't have adequate, sufficient notice. Trump complaining about his attorneys not having time to prepare, him posting and then taking it down, right? But at the end of the day, what will they do? They will take this time to assess what they didn't cover, and then they'll come back and they'll go at her. And it's all about in cross-examination credibility. And that's why you see the tonal shift. And it is, right, Jeremy? On direct examination, it's very conversational. But cross-examination, it's credibility.
It's,
you did
and
what?
And Stephanie, before we go, what is Trump doing right now? I mean, in terms of micromanaging his lawyers, because the cross is still going on, right? His attorney is going to be the one who starts off next.
Yeah, so I guarantee you he's going to be monitoring all the news coverage and getting perspectives from various people, and he's going to be calling his attorneys nonstop until probably court starts up again on Thursday, telling them, "We need to do this. We need to go after her for this." I mean, that is how involved he will be. He did it to pretty much everyone in the White House for various reasons. So I feel bad for them in that for that reason.
All right. Thank you all very much. And next, breaking news, Trump's classified documents trial, we've just found out, has been postponed indefinitely. And that ruling coming, of course, from Judge Eileen Cannon, appointed by Trump. Plus, a dangerous situation unfolding in southern Gaza. Israeli forces now control the Rafah crossing. That leaves more than 1 million people who have sought refuge in Rafah without aid and without fuel. Take you to the ground. And Biden and Trump now laser focused on one state, a state that's up for grabs.
What I want is something to vote for, not vote against.
Yeah.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Breaking news, the judge in Trump's classified documents case has indefinitely postponed Trump's trial. Judge Eileen Cannon, who was appointed by Trump himself and has issued a number of controversial rulings in his favor, saying it would be, quote, imprudent and, quote, inconsistent to set a trial date now. The case was supposed to go to trial this month. The decision all but guarantees that that is now not going to happen before the election. Out front now, former Trump White House attorney Ty Cobb. Ty, you've been clear with your feelings of how Judge Cannon has handled this case, but this is direct. This isn't just she's, you know, by having an unrealistic trial date on the calendar, we know she's not really putting one on. This is direct. Like, it's over. It's not happening. What's your reaction to it?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Aaron. This is direct. This is clear. All she's really done today, though, is make official what everybody, including Jack Smith, already knew, which was she had no intention of getting this case to trial, and she wasn't competent to get this case to trial. She talks about her duty to fully and fairly consider the pending motions. She's had months to do that and did very little. She's had she's ruled on only three of the 12 motions to dismiss, all of which could have been easily resolved by now. She ignored Jack Smith's set forth a detailed hearing and pleading schedule for the SEPA issues, the Classified Intelligence Materials, Procedures Act materials, which she wholly ignored and did not act on until today when she scheduled two of the necessary hearings on that for the first time. So, you know, this is something that I think it was always her objective, frankly, to prevent this from going to trial. But also, I think, you know, her inability, wholesale inability to do it was made palpable.
So, Ty, is this bias or is it just utter incompetence?
Well, I think I once said that it's, to be fair to her, she may merely be incompetent. But no, this is a combination of bias and incompetence. I mean, for example, she scheduled a hearing on today in this order on the issue of, you know, who constitutes Trump's trial team, or not Trump's, the Justice Department's trial team here, the special counsel's trial team, because of Trump's frivolous allegations that it includes a sweeping number of government officials. Now, that's a frivolous motion. No other judge would actually have a hearing on that, but she has scheduled one. The things that she has done here are really inexplicable, and it's tragic. She talks about the public, you know, having honored the public's interest in the administration of justice by postponing the trial. You know, she has not honored the public's interest, for one day in this case, as she has sat in her office, apparently paralyzed from ruling on easily resolvable motions. And sadly, this case will not go to trial, notwithstanding the fact that it's one of the most important cases in history and could have easily been tried in advance of the election.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the fact pattern on that one, very clear, right? This is not like something like January 6th, where there are a lot of precedent and other issues to consider. Does Jack Smith have any recourse on this, or is this just, case closed?
So I don't believe he does. Scheduling is an area traditionally where judges have wide latitude. I don't think he would have the ability to get her removed on this or overruled on this. I do think, you know, she is not capable of ruling intelligently or fairly on most of the motions that will be pending, and certainly the classified information issues. And I think at some point she will be removed in advance of trial. But keep in mind, this case now can't go to trial until mid to late 2025, and it won't go to trial if Trump is elected.
So does this have any impact on Smith and the January 6th case?
No, but I think even there, if the court rules as suspected in late June or early July, the Supreme Court, that will have been 6 months from the time that it first left the district court. And if you just add those 6 months onto that date, that takes us well beyond the election. I don't think either of those cases has a chance to go. I think the only case we're going to have tried to conclusion, if it gets there, is this New York case.
All right, Ty, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Aaron. Good to be with you.
All right, you too. And next, Israel warning its military operation in southern Gaza, where more than 1 million people are trapped, will expand as necessary. So what does this mean for the ceasefire that Hamas agreed to? Plus, I'll talk to the sketch artist who captured this moment from Trump's trial today. Chose Daniels looking toward the jury, and there was a very specific reason this moment is so important, and she'll tell you why. Tonight, Israel showing no signs of backing down, saying its military operation in Rafah will continue and even expand till Hamas is eliminated or more hostages are returned home. At one point, the State Department announcing that the bombardment of Rafah looked like a, quote, prelude to a major military operation, one that Israel has been telegraphing for weeks, before clarifying that the United States says they don't know if that is what's happening right now. Biden, of course, has called an incursion into Rafah a, quote, red line. Jeremy Diamond is out front.
Israeli tanks rolling into Rafah for the first time early this morning, crushing the last remaining signs of Palestinian control over Gaza's lifeline to the outside world. The Rafah border crossing with Egypt now firmly under Israeli control. For now, that means nothing in or out at this critical crossing point for humanitarian aid, fuel, and medical evacuations. As plumes of smoke rise over the area, the Israeli Prime Minister touting the operation as a play to bolster Israeli leverage in ceasefire talks with Hamas, which put a new proposal on the table hours before Israeli tanks rolled into Rafah.
Military pressure on Hamas is a necessary condition for the return of our hostages. The Hamas proposal yesterday was intended to torpedo the entry of our forces into Rafah. It did not happen.
Israeli air and artillery strikes began pummeling eastern Rafah late Monday night. Hospital officials say 23 people, including 6 children, were killed in the overnight assault. Others were left shaken by what they saw.
I am 69 years old and I haven't seen in my life shelling and bombing like this. I have witnessed many wars in my life and I haven't seen a war like this one.
Things could soon get worse. Israeli officials are threatening to expand military operations deeper into Rafah, where more than 1 million Palestinians currently live.
A full-scale assault on Rafah would be a human catastrophe. Countless more civilian casualties. Countless more families forced to flee.
Thousands are already fleeing what was once the last refuge in Gaza for this coastal area the Israeli military calls a humanitarian zone, setting up makeshift shelters with tarp sheets and thin planks of wood. This woman has just arrived with her grandchildren after a sleepless night in Rafah, displaced once again.
We saw death with our own eyes. Airstrikes forced us to leave. We roamed in the streets like nomads.
Humanitarian aid officials warn this area isn't equipped to handle the basic needs of hundreds of thousands of people who could soon be forced to leave Rafah. After 7 months of war, ceasefire negotiations offer the only hope of a way out.
And Aaron, those ceasefire negotiations are continuing this week in Cairo as Israel and Hamas try and bridge the gap between these two framework proposals which they have agreed to. Hamas is still pushing for an end to the war. They are also saying that they intend to offer up the bodies of hostages to round out the number of 33 hostages released during that first phase of the agreement. Israeli sources telling me that those are both non-starters for the Israeli government, so a lot more work clearly needs to be done in the days ahead. Aaron.
Jeremy, thank you very much for that important reporting. Out front now, Democratic Congressman Jared Moskowitz of Florida, a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. And Congressman, I appreciate your time. As we understand it right now and what's on the ground, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is moving ahead in Rafah. Obviously, despite President Biden consistently expressing deep concern about the catastrophic effect this could have on civilians. You know, a million of them were told to go there and to seek refuge. And here is what some of them are saying now.
The situation is very difficult. The street we were on was targeted with an airstrike, hitting the entire residential block.
We don't know what to do. We are going into the unknown.
I don't know where to go. I don't know where to head to. I prefer to die. Death is more dignified than this.
Congressman, what do you say to the incredible suffering that is happening right now amongst the civilian population in Gaza as this Rafah operation begins?
No, thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me. Well, look, it's obviously heartbreaking. It's gut-wrenching. It's why myself and, you know, a majority of my colleagues are praying for a ceasefire. We've been hoping that we would get to a ceasefire. You know, obviously not the lie, not the propaganda ceasefire that Hamas put out yesterday that many in the world's media took as factual, meant as propaganda by Hamas, but a real ceasefire that leads to the release of hostages. We've obviously, unfortunately, reached the point where those ceasefire negotiations have failed, mainly because it's not clear how many hostages, unfortunately, may still be alive. Hamas now changing their position to releasing bodies. And so, look, I've listened to the president. I agree with the president on this. We want to make sure, obviously, that anything that happens in Rafah is limited, that we're making sure that humanitarian aid is getting in through those corridors, that we're limiting civilian life as much as possible. But Hamas can end this right now, today, right this second as we're talking, by agreeing to the ceasefire proposals that's been on the table for the release of hostages. Or what they need to do is come out and admit how many people are still alive so that we know what we're dealing with.
Congressman, why would they agree to a ceasefire at this point, though, when all a ceasefire is a pause before Netanyahu goes in and continues to kill people? I mean, it's almost as if, you know, they're asking for a permanent end to this. And that seems to be off the table for Israel. Should it be off the table?
Well, by the way, Aaron, I agree with you. Why would Hamas agree to a ceasefire? There's almost no pressure on Hamas. The pressure is only on Israel. I mean, there's just absolutely no pressure on Hamas. Every day, Hamas looks at social media, they look at the television, and they don't see anyone condemning Hamas anymore or putting pressure on Hamas or saying, Hamas, please agree to a ceasefire. No, they only see people saying that to Israel. So that's unfortunately why Israel is now re-upping the military pressure.
But the civilians that are being killed right now are being killed because of the Israeli onslaught.
They're being killed because Hamas won't release the hostages, Aaron. Both things can be true, right? Like we can say the war is continuing because Hamas won't release the hostages, and the war is continuing because Israel decided to go into Rafah, right? So, both things can be true simultaneously.
I understand. I want to ask you about, you know, you brought up President Biden. You said you agree with him. He gave an important speech at the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum today, calling on Americans to fight what he called a ferocious surge of anti-Semitism. He directly connected the Holocaust to the horrific attack on October 7th. And here's part of what he said.
To the Jewish community, I want you to know, I see your fear, your hurt, and your pain. Let me reassure you, as your president, you're not alone. You belong. You always have and you always will.
You were there, Congressman, for the president's speech. I know you've been one of the most outspoken members of Congress on the rise of anti-Semitism in the United States and around the world. So did you feel that today's message, what the president said, met the moment?
Well, the president was powerful. He was strong. He was unequivocal. And it was moving. And listen, President Biden has been fighting anti-Semitism his entire career in the Senate as vice president and as president before October 7th. He started the anti-Semitism task force under his administration. He had the ambassador to combat anti-Semitism. These are things he did before October 7th. But obviously, the president's words are needed. They are warranted because, you know, the Jewish community is turning on the television every day and they're seeing the anti-Semitism all over their screens on college campuses. And if you listened to the stories of Holocaust survivors today, the stories they told are similar to the things we're seeing today. You know, the Holocaust didn't happen, start with the gas chambers. It started with words. And so we really appreciate the president always providing moral clarity, as he always does.
Congressman Moskowitz, I very much appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
And a special programming note, I will be sitting down with President Biden for an exclusive interview tomorrow in Wisconsin. And that interview will air tomorrow night right here on OutFront at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Out front next, I'm going to speak to the sketch artist who was also in the room as prosecutors were questioning Stormy Daniels. What she says was the most interesting moment of the entire trial so far. And RFK Jr. getting a boost tonight in his battle to get on every single state ballot.
The assignment with me, Audie Cornish. Okay, by now you have probably heard that rappers Kendrick Lamar and Drake went after each other in a once-in-a-generation rap battle. By the time algorithms were done, the Kendrick-Drake beef had reached far beyond the walls of hip-hop. What can we learn from the first great rap battle of the streaming age? Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Tonight, Stormy Daniels defiant, fighting back and raising her voice as Trump's lawyer tried to question her motives and raised her voice, questioning her motives for coming forward with allegations of an affair with Donald Trump. Trump's lawyer asking, quote, "You've been making money by claiming to have had sex with President Trump for more than a decade." Daniels responded, snapped back, "I've been making money by telling my story about what happened to me." Later, Trump's attorney accuses Daniels of lying about someone threatening her in a parking garage in 2011. It's a crucial incident in the whole narrative here. And she says, the lawyer to Stormy Daniels, "This man never existed, did he?" Daniels fires back, and this was immediate. He absolutely existed. None of it's made up. And out front now is Elizabeth Williams, sketch artist in the court many days, and of course for the explosive testimony today. Elizabeth, I try to read it, you know, all being in the room with sort of the intensity that it was. I mean, it was adversarial. It was aggressive. It was back and forth. It was nasty. And you, so let's start with one of your key sketches today. Stormy Daniels is acting out on the stand.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Tell me what she's doing here.
This was when she described how she found Donald Trump after she used the restroom in his penthouse suite. And she came out and he was... This happened in the middle of her testimony. She says, "Oh yes, he came out and he was lying on the bed like this, with his underwear on."
And she acts it out like
and
this
she
is the pose.
Acted it out. Mm-hmm. And then she's gesticulating. She's moving. So you're constantly moving and gesticulating. I mean, trying to draw all this going on. But when she acted that out, it was like, wow, okay, now we have to get
that. And
she
held the position long enough for you to get the actual
time.
And
he was lying like this on the bed in his underwear, and I just came out of the bed, and this is what I saw. I mean, it was so visual. It was like, oh, my God.
the image, right? It gave the jurors the image, and, of course, he's sitting right there.
Yeah.
So you can see Trump watching Daniels on the stand in one of your images.
Yes. Later, when they started talking about the contracts and the money stuff, he then turns towards her. And now he's eyeing her, looking at her, trying to, you know, really studying her, as opposed to when she was talking about the sexual encounter. He definitely turned away. I had the back of his head, and so that's why I
looked the other way.
That's why I was focusing on her. I'm sorry.
Oh no, I was saying when you know the jury. We know that they have been obviously incredibly engaged in great minutia all the way through.
Yes.
Today, though, today was riveting.
Oh yeah.
And you noticed just their full engagement. I mean, in terms of note taking, which some days they're all listening, but there isn't a lot of note taking. It's different today.
There was a lot of note-taking done today. I noticed I had the view of the line of them, like chorus line, and they were all on their notepads. They are given pads, and almost every single one of them was writing at the same time, and she's now focused towards them. So she's looking at them. She can't see that they're writing, but I see they're all writing all these notes, you know, independently, all at the same time, while she's testifying,
which is fascinating.
Yeah, both. I'm sorry.
Oh no. The judge, one of your sketches is actually of Judge Juan Merchan.
Yeah.
Now he was interesting. You know, he was he was frustrated at one moment at the end, made it clear, like, hey, to the defense, you guys should have raised objections. I had to object for you.
Right.
But this being said, there was way more information here than we needed to hear from her. And
yes.
You saw that frustration.
There were a lot of offhand comments. There were a lot of remarks that didn't need to be made. You know, judges like you to listen to a question and answer the question, not make other kind of comments, offhand comments, things like that. And it's very hard to contain a witness like that. Eventually, they took her in the back and her attorney and the prosecutor talked to her, tried to get her to contain herself somewhat. And she was better after that. But she's still clearly, I think, very nervous and moving around a lot and very different from the time that I drew her in the Avenatti trial, where she had a very different demeanor. This one, she's visibly anxious. That's how I view it. Energetic, moving around, all this stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Very energetic and moving around. That's true. But interesting as you're contrasting her in the prior case.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth, thank you very much. Elizabeth Williams, great to see you. And next, RFK Jr. getting on more state ballots tonight. Should Trump or Biden be more nervous about yet another state where RFK is going to be a box you can check? Tonight, RFK Jr. adding his name to the ballot in another state, Delaware. It is the fifth state where RFK is officially on the ballot. His team says he has enough signatures to appear in 9 others. He's told me he'll be on all 50. It comes as Donald Trump and President Biden are laser focused on the must-win state of Wisconsin, a state that put them each over the top when they won. Biden will make his fourth visit to the state tomorrow, where, as I mentioned, I'll be sitting down for an exclusive interview with him. Jeff Zeleny is there tonight out front in Wisconsin.
It's a mess, man.
Dave Flannery is talking about the state of American politics.
It's a mess.
How does it get fixed?
I wish I knew.
Flannery has a ringside seat to the noisy presidential race from his quiet orchard in Battleground, Wisconsin. President Biden will be just miles away Wednesday when he returns to the state for his fourth visit this year.
A lot of construction going on, several thousand jobs are going to be created over there during the construction process.
The president is touting his economic agenda. It's an open question whether any projects will ease anxieties of small business owners like Flannery.
So this is the top of it.
Who debated if he should add a new building on his Apple Holler farms.
Things are really uncertain, not knowing what's going to happen with interest rates and what's going to happen with the whole economy.
Wisconsin is an essential piece of Biden's reelection roadmap.
I hope that people will look to reason, integrity, character of our national leader and vote appropriately.
And in your view, which way is that?
Biden. He's old, so what?
Maureen Glynn and her husband Dennis worry and wonder why the Biden-Trump rematch seems so bitterly tight.
I just think that people have forgotten how chaotic it was when Trump was president. I feel a lot better now that we've had almost 4 years of Biden. It's not great, but it's better.
Biden is visiting Racine, home to one of 46 Democratic offices across the state. A key piece of his coalition is black voters, some of whom don't see how they benefit from his economic plan.
As they see the prices rise with Biden, they think Trump made the economy better and Biden is making it worse.
Javonna Liu and Kyle Johnson are community organizers. They say the president must address his challenge with young voters who question his foreign policy and more.
What I want is something to vote for and not vote against.
Yeah.
You know, we hear a lot of, you know, what is the other guy going to do? What is Trump going to do? What happens if he wins? I understand that. You know, I think a lot of us understand the stakes.
At the Cozy Nook Farm, Tom Oberhaus fondly recalls Trump's policies, but is far from his biggest admirer.
It's more Trump's mouth that we're not happy with.
Or Biden's biggest critic.
Once he was elected president, I was. Yeah, he's our president. Supporting.
He believes the country deserves better.
I think we need a new constitution amendment that says if you're 70 or over, you can't run for national office. And, you know, we're like, oh, I can't be on the local co-op board, but I could be president of the United States.
Back at the orchard, Flannery worries neither side will cool the rising tensions.
I consider myself an independent. Mm-hmm.
Is your vote up for grabs in November?
At this point in time, I would say no, but November is a long ways away.
And
And you can see the hesitancy there with Dave Flannery not wanting to say who he's voting for. Aaron, that is because of the divisiveness here. He says he's a small business owner. He wants to sell apples to Republicans and Democrats alike. The bottom line, there is no path to re-election for Biden or to election for Donald Trump without Wisconsin. Both campaigns know that. Aaron? Right.
Jeff Zeleny, thank you very much, and we'll see you in Wisconsin tomorrow. Please join us tomorrow night. We'll be live from Wisconsin with our exclusive interview with President Biden. AC 360 starts now.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.